Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello, and welcome to episode 35 Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. It's a double guest one for today's episode. I am joined by Nicole and Benjamin Perry. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us. We're excited.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And I know we were talking about a little bit off air about my apologies and not having you on sooner, because both of you are absolutely perfect for this podcast, as we'll kind of divulge and go on to in the future. And there's a lot of similarities between Benjamin, your story, and my story in terms of advocacy. So we'll go into that as well later on. But we will start from pretty much the beginning, or not quite the beginning, kind of 22 months in, Benjamin being diagnosed with Hirschsprungs. Do you want to talk a little bit about sort of just pre-diagnosis from birth, and then leading up to the diagnosis from there?
Absolutely. So Benjamin is a twin. Him and his twin were born at 36 and a half weeks. So they were early. They were preemies. Both were in the NICU. Bentley is his brother's name. He was in for growing and feeding. And Benjamin just kind of, they couldn't pinpoint what was wrong with Benjamin. So he did have a very small but burst stool, if you will. So Hirschsprungs was never on the table for us. So initially they diagnosed Benjamin with a milk protein allergy. And while in the NICU, Benjamin received donor milk. And then we then went to a special formula, Neocate. And he did that. And Benjamin just wasn't growing. And he just kind of was lethargic-y, jaundice-y, pretty much the first few months of his life. And I would take him to the ER because he wasn't eating or whatnot. And they would just say, you know, oh, he's constipated, or, oh, you know, it's just his milk protein allergy. We'll give him some IV fluids and he'll be fine. And we had gone to Disneyland when they were about 18 months old, and we had spent a day on the beach. And I kind of looked at my husband and I said, man, he kind of looks like a little pregnant baby. His stomach is just so distended. And I said, I really want to pursue this with the doctors. Like, I really want to figure out what's wrong. And I do have an uncle who's an ER doctor, and I kind of touched base with him. And I'm like, you know, these are kind of the things I'm seeing. And, you know, he told me things to advocate for and whatnot. So we go into a children's hospital here in Denver, and basically they're like, you know, nothing's wrong. We go to the ear, nose, and throat specialist. We go to the GI specialist. We go to all these specialists. Everybody's like, nothing's really wrong here. And I'm like, no, you guys, there's something really wrong with my baby. Like, I am 1,000% certain there is something wrong with him. Like, can we do x-rays? Can we do biopsies? Whatever. And kind of got a lot of pushback. And finally, they were like, let's do an x-ray. So they do a set of x-rays. And I mean, from the x-ray alone, I mean, it was just swirly balls of mess, right? And they looked at me and they go, he's good. He just has some constipation, all is well. And so I take it back. I email it to my uncle, who's a doctor. And he goes, Nicole, you need to fight this. He goes, an intestines is supposed to look like a rainbow, and that certainly is not a rainbow. And I was like, right. So I take it back and I'm like, you guys, listen, I have consulted my uncle, who's a doctor. I have talked to numerous friends and family, and I really, really want to push for a biopsy. And in fact, this is probably the hardest part of our story to tell. My husband and I, this is my husband's first set of children, were twins, and I had had a 10-year-old daughter. And so we're in the hospital and I'm, you know, begging for this biopsy, and we're in like a parent meeting room. So a mini conference room, I guess you would say, very small room. And they ask my husband to please leave the room. The doctor and a nurse come and grab my husband and say, can we please talk to you privately? And left me in the room and basically interrogated my husband and said, listen, we think your wife has Munchausen by proxy. Do you think there's something really wrong with your son? Or do you think your wife is, you know, maybe has a mental illness or all these things? And my husband's like, no, like there's something wrong with our son. And they said, how much do you trust your wife? And he said, well, 100%. Like, she is certain there's something wrong with our son. And they go, well, if we do this biopsy and it comes back that there's nothing wrong with him, we're going to press charges against your wife for child abuse and Munchausen syndrome. And we're 28 years old, right? Like, yes, I had already had a child, but still 28 years old. And so my husband had never, and he has these two doctors, he's not even in a room with me, can't consult with me, and has to make an on-the-spot decision if he trusts me enough to move forward with this biopsy that's scheduled in 30 minutes. And luckily, obviously, my husband was like, go, like, do the biopsy. Like, I trust my wife completely. And then he came in. So I didn't even know that that was a topic until Benjamin was already in surgery for his biopsy. And he explained it to me. And he's like, listen, like, here's what's going to happen if nothing's wrong with him. Fine. They get done with the biopsy. Obviously, they have to send it off to the labs for results. So they let us go home. Within 24 hours, I get a phone call. And the phone call goes, Miss Perry, this is so-and-so from such-and-such hospital. Can you bring your son to the emergency room? He actually has a disease that could kill him. Excuse me? Time out. Yesterday, you guys wanted to press charges against me. And today, my son has to get to an emergency room because he could die. And that's exactly how the phone call happened. I was sitting at a park with the twins and a friend. And I literally just dropped everything, packed up the twins, called my husband and said, I'm on my way to the hospital right now. Benjamin has to have emergency surgery. They said he could die. And that was all the information I had. Knew nothing about the word Hirschsprung. Nothing. I just am driving as fast as I can to a hospital. So get to the hospital. And they're like, we're going to take Benjamin in. We're going to do what's called anal rectal pull through. Like, and they're speaking to me in all this hospital jargon that I am not aware of. And I'm just dumbfounded. And so Benjamin goes back in for surgery, and this all is transpiring, which we talked a little bit off air. Yesterday was his 10-year anniversary since this very specific surgery we're discussing. So my husband and I are pacing the waiting room. They said it could be anywhere from 2 to 6 hour surgery. They didn't know how long it was going to take. They said they had to go in and explore because they weren't sure. And again, all I knew was the word Hirschsprung's, and that was it. I knew no other details. So Benjamin's in surgery, and I decide to start researching. You know, I'm researching, what can I find out about Hirschsprung's? And I'm Googling, which, again, not the greatest thing to do while your child's in surgery, is to hit the Google search engine. Benjamin gets out of surgery. He goes up, and he has a stoma. Because they were going to, I guess what they were going to do was, you know, cut the intestines, let it heal, and then go back in and reattach later after he had some time to heal, right? So he has his colostomy, he's in the hospital, and within the first 24 hours, I start looking at his small intestine, which is in his colostomy, and I'm like, man, it's turning colors, like it's getting really dark.
Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Well, the nurses, everybody's like, it's fine, this is how they normally look, you're fine, you're good. And I'm like, guys, I'm really, like, it's not. We had this one nurse, I'll never forget, her name was Calypso. I thought it was the most interesting name, but I will never forget her because I looked at her and I said, something is wrong again. And she looked at it and she goes, you're right. Well, needless to say, they caught it too late and Benjamin had to go in for a second emergency surgery because they had killed off part of his healthy small intestine with that. So back in with the colostomy bag, which for a two-year-old was the most challenging thing we've ever dealt with. It was really hard being a twin, wanting to be as active as your brother, and bags pop literally all the time. I mean, for any reason under the sun, just because they're there, they pop. And so we had an in-home nurse that would come twice a week and help me change out like his bandages and all his stuff and whatnot. And so by October, so this happened in August, by October, they were ready to reattach. So they, you know, we go back into the hospital, we go in for a reattachment and they're like, okay, you know, wait a couple months and he should start stooling and everything should be great. Okay. That was it. So we go home and, you know, we're doing irrigations and we're doing all the things that we're supposed to be doing at this point. And Benjamin's still not stooling like well, still not the greatest. And then on the days that it was stool, it was 15 to 20 diapers in a day. I mean, it was just draining out of him. And I'm like, okay. So long story short, we just kept going back. Like I felt like I was a frequent flyer, but I'm like, this isn't the right fix. So then we decided to change hospitals and doctors altogether. So change doctors, change hospitals. Well, the new plan in place was let's give him a thecostomy and let's see if we can do flushes from the outside in and kind of help him regulate that. So that was like the next plan. Simultaneously, as we're meeting this new doctor, we're getting ready to have a cystectomy placed on him. I find REACH, like through internet searches, now that I'm in a better place to be searching on the internet and know what I'm more specifically looking for. And I just reached out. Like I reached out to their like question page and I get a call from Liz Crawford and Kate. And my life changed after speaking with Kate and Liz. So a 1-hour phone call turned into, hey, can you come to and meet, you know, a phone meeting with the rest of the board. And from there, it kind of just spiraled, right? And I just found such an amazing community within REACH. Yeah. So from about the time Benjamin was 4 to about 6 or 7, we just had annual cystectomy replacement surgeries, which come to find out they could have stayed in a lot longer than 1 year, but the surgeon wanted to replace it every single year. So Benjamin kind of went through all these surgeries. But being on the board, I never wanted to, I don't know the right way to word it. I never wanted to assume that because I was on the board, I could just get access to all these amazing doctors that are on the board, right? Like I didn't want to assume like, because I'm on the board, you guys should or need to help me. So I kind of just always would ask little questions here or there. But Liz was just such a advocate and a help. And we had gone to different events. Like I was going to their annual symposiums with them and we were in Nebraska and we were sitting in a car talking and Liz goes, you know what? We need to bring this up. Like we need to bring this up, you know, at dinner later and, you know, maybe just pick the brains of the surgeons on the board. So we do, we have a conversation and Dr. Alan Goldstein, who is one of our board members, was like, hey, if your insurance takes it and you feel comfortable, why don't you and Benjamin come out to Boston and Boston Mass General and we'll just run some tests. Let me just run some tests. So get home and, you know, get everything organized with insurance. And Benjamin and I flew out to Boston about 2017 and trying to get my timeline correct here. And at that time we did, you know, we did another biopsy. We did I never want to use the medical terms because I never pronounce them right, but it's the balloon test, the anal rectal mammo. I can't even say it. I'm not going to try. But they basically put a balloon in and insert it to see like how much sensation you are feeling. Of all the tests that Benjamin underwent, That was by far the hardest that we have ever endured. Obviously, he was awake for it. As we get through all these tests, and what Dr. Goldstein had found was literally a millimeters. Had they gone up millimeters more when they did the initial pull through, they would have taken out all the dead aganglionic cells, and then a little bit further to help so that new cells could regenerate, but they didn't. So it just died again, right? So Dr. Goldstein's recommendation was, let me do a secondary anal rectal pull through. Let's, you know, give Benjamin this time. Let's get this all planned out. It took about a year. So December of 2018, Benjamin and I flew back out to Boston. And on his dad's birthday, December 18th, we had his secondary pull through. And it was a life changer, right? Game changer. So we get through that secondary pull through. And I had the Reach board support. I still have videos of Liz and all the board members just calling Benjamin and wishing him luck, and everybody just circling us with love. And our founder, Eric, lives out there. So he visited Benjamin and I in the hospital. Like everybody, like it was really just divine intervention, right? Like life just worked out exactly how it was supposed to, because these incredible people that I met through Reach are all supporting this, you know, very scary process. And we had the secondary pull through. We made it home literally 2 days before Christmas. And we just didn't know how it was going to go from there, right? So we still had the cystectomy button. We were going to keep that in place as a secondary measure just to kind of see, but so that we always had a way to flush him if there was ever an issue. COVID, well, we're fast forwarding. So that was at the very end of 2018. So now, yep. 2019, kind of status quo. You know, we were still doing the cystectomy button, but instead of doing it daily, we were now doing it like every few days just to help keep him regular. And then COVID hit, right? And the world kind of shut down. And while COVID was so devastating and so awful, it did wonders for a child with Hirschsprung's that really needed to focus on stooling. And we spent the first 4 months of COVID figuring out how to regulate and time Benjamin's stools with the laxative. And so he would take a laxative and we would trial and error. Let's try in the morning. When does it make him stool? Let's try it this time. When does it make him stool? We did this for a while. And by June of 2020, we felt comfortable enough to remove Benjamin's cystectomy and let him attempt to stool with just a laxative, daily laxative on his own. And he learned that when he felt like he needed to throw up, that wasn't really he needed to throw up. That means, oh, I need to go to the bathroom. Benjamin's not really a kid that when he gets sick, he ever really does throw up. So that was kind of his indicator. And that was at, you know, 7, 8 years old. Now at 11, he's able to say, if I want to eat that pancake, I know in 15, 20 minutes, I'm going to need a bathroom.
Right.
But COVID really, really helped us time and regulate and get a sense of body for Benjamin. And that was pivotal, crucial, right? But since then, I will say, for those looking for hope, Benjamin is in the best place in his life he has ever been with Hirschsprung's. Some days we forget we even have Hirschsprung's, to be honest, minus the daily laxative that we take. So it was a blur. It was a lot of exhaustion and just terrifying nights and days. But after a lot of just trusting my gut, my instinct, trusting my doctors, trusting my support system, Benjamin's in a really good place. And he, in fact, is here, obviously, like you mentioned, to advocate. And he does. He goes to the Reach symposiums with us. He advocates. He loves to talk to other children. He is so proud to have Hirschsprung's. And I know that sounds interesting, right? But when we got that diagnosis at 2, I looked at him and I said, you know what? If he was an amputee, if he had cancer, if he had any number of issues, we would never let it deter him from being authentically who he is or doing anything he wants to do. So as we mentioned a little bit before hopping on, Benjamin played football. I mean, American football, but he played football nonetheless. And we ace bandaged his stomach with two or three ace bandages to cover this costomy so that no matter what happened with this, and it was flag football, right? Because I'm a mom and I got to make sure he's not going to get tackled when he has a costomy button. But nonetheless, we let him participate in everything in life that he wanted to. And we never let Hirschsprungs deter him. We made it his superpower. I mean, as you see on the Reach website, if you go to the stories, he's Batman. I mean, it was his superpower. Hirschsprungs has made Benjamin be able to talk publicly and speak publicly. He's currently just finished writing the next piece for the newsletter for Reach. But Benjamin loves to advocate. So I'm going to let him jump in really quick because I've been kind of giving you the story, but I'm going to let him jump in and speak directly to having Hirschsprungs.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just ask a quick question to you, Benjamin, if I may. The piece of writing you've done for the newsletter, what's it about?
It's about my story.
And your camp.
And my camp I did.
What was that about?
Oh. I did this Hirschsprungs camp and...
Well, it's a GI camp.
And
tell me what it's called.
It's called Roundup River Ranch, and we did a lot of cool things like fishing, ziplining, canoeing, and horseback riding.
Everything. So, everything. That sounds fantastic.
There's an American actor named Paul Newman that had created a camp here in Colorado in Gypsum for sick kids, right? And so each week is dedicated to either gastrointestinal, heart disease, all these different things. And you have to apply to get in. It's run solely by doctors, nurses, and volunteers, which most of them are in their residency program or nursing program. And it's just a safe haven for kids to go that all have like illnesses, but that want to do exactly what other kids their age are doing. And it was the first year he got to go in person. And he's been, you know, he's gone every year virtually because you can't start till you're 7, which happened to be COVID. But it is amazing for families. He met kids from all over the country. You can fly in from any state, anywhere. You just have to apply to go to this camp. And it was a game changer. Benjamin will be back every year until he's 17. And then he hopes to volunteer. So
that's fantastic. And again, I'll just pick up on that point with you, Benjamin, because you're someone who sort of typifies what this podcast is about. One of the reasons I started doing this podcast is because I want to show people that there are people with Hirschsprungs out there who don't let things get in their way. They go and do, you know, as you mentioned, the football and the horse riding and the et cetera, et cetera. And I'd love to touch off on sports, if I may, because that's my sort of speciality. And it's what I do for a living and have done for best part of 15 years or so. But with your, I'll call it American football. Sorry about that. I know you call it football. I'll call it American football. Do you have a particular position that you play in?
Wide receiver, usually.
Runner then. Quick runner.
And what other sports do you play?
I play baseball.
All night.
I usually play second base.
Oh.
And Hirschsprungs doesn't stop me. It's just if I run so much, I have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. That's fair enough. Oh, that's fun. It's so good to hear, though, that you take part in all kinds of different things, and it just doesn't let you stop you. It doesn't stand in your way at all. And that's absolutely fantastic. I know I was reading your story, and I know it sort of goes up to when you're the age of 5. And at the bottom bit, it says that you want to become a doctor and help people. Do you still want to go into that field, or do you want to do something else?
I've been thinking about that.
I mean, you're only 11. It doesn't matter. You've got loads of time.
I might be a doctor, but I was thinking about like a sports player.
It's a good career. It's a good career.
Doctor's a backup plan to being like a pro athlete.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, no, that's fantastic. No, I mean, obviously, with my sporting background, it was what I wanted to do as well. So it was, yeah, no, going into sports is fantastic. Really, really
rewarding. What sports do you work with?
Mainly cricket. So my actual job, apart from doing this podcast and doing radio as well, is I'm a cricket development officer. So I work with countries all over the world, increasing their participation in cricket in, I think, 6 different countries I work with at the moment. So yeah, it's good fun. Good fun. It's good to, and then before that I did teaching and coaching and playing and all sorts. So, but yeah, no, it's great. But enough about me. We'll stick to the task at hand. And there's a couple of questions I have for you. And you mentioned the word cecostomy. Not a word I've heard too much. Obviously, I've heard ileostomy and various others. Could you just explain just briefly what a cecostomy is?
Yeah, so I literally just called it his button, but it essentially was like a little pocket door on his stomach that would open up to a hole, and we would stick an IV, like a drip in it, and we would just flush him from the outside in. We would just tell it, you know, and it's really cute. I actually, his brother used to sit with him because sometimes it would be a process, right? Because we would do like 500 cc's of a little solution of like saline with a little bit of Miralax in it. And he would have to sit on the loo forever, right? Like forever. So he was definitely an iPad kid, because what else do you do when you're just sitting there? But his brother, we have some precious photos of like his brother would sit in there and like hold his hand for support. But at about the age of 6, Benjamin knew how to handle and fill his bag, dump the right amount of Miralax in, hang it up, sit down, put it in. He did it all on his own. I mean, I did it when he was little, but he really took initiative and did it all on his own.
That's brilliant. Oh, well done you. And I love, you mentioned the iPad there, and I love talking to people who are about sort of, because I think you're about 20 years younger than I am, Benjamin. So when I went through it, iPads weren't around. And obviously Google and everything and certainly smartphones weren't around. So my mom didn't have that sort of like, look up Google and this, that, the other. So I always find it interesting talking to people and see how much, you know, things have progressed. And see, when I had to do all of that stuff as well, there was no iPad to watch, unfortunately.
That would be a bummer.
Yeah. I don't know how I got through it. But thank you very much for that explanation, because it's not a word that I've necessarily heard before. And one of the other... You are a twin, obviously, as you mentioned. Was there sort of a reason given as to why one twin has Hirschsprungs and why one twin doesn't have Hirschsprungs?
No, unfortunately, there was no. I mean, initially, I thought it was premature, you know, just premature birth. Benjamin was in flux, which basically just meant he was kind of stuck in utero the whole time. So he didn't really do a lot of moving. Baby B, which is Bentley, grew in my hip, basically. I don't know if that kind of was it. They had me on several different medications. I don't know. I sometimes speculate that could potentially have been a reason, because some of the medications, looking back, I probably shouldn't have been on during pregnancy. So, no, I don't think there's a... Maybe just the luck of the draw. I don't know. Yeah. What do you want to say?
Weird that he doesn't have Hirschsprungs, because I was born first.
I know that. Yeah, it always fascinates me, one of those things, because as I've mentioned a couple of times, I'm one of 4 boys, and I'm the only one with Hirschsprungs. So it always fascinates me as to why did I get it and why did my brothers not? Nobody's ever given me an answer, and it seems like 20 years on, there's still no answer out there.
My husband and I like to say that Benjamin got Hirschsprungs because of the two, Bentley is the worst sick kid ever. Like, he cries and is whiny and just super aggressive with being sick. So we're like, well, if anybody had to get Hirschsprungs, it would be the one that could tolerate it.
Yeah, you can not with it.
No.
You're the stealer.
Put it like a champ.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's so good to hear. And just apart from sports as well, Benjamin, do you have any other hobbies that you do as well?
I like video games.
Well, video games, of course.
Yeah.
drawing. I like school.
You like school? Nice. That's good to hear. That's always good to hear. That's fantastic. Favorite
video? We just started middle school, so that's a big deal.
Fantastic. No, that's... And middle school at... It's 11 at that age.
Yeah, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade here.
7th, 8th grade. Yeah, I'm trying to do the English conversion in my head from when we had middle schools. I don't think we've had middle school. We used to have middle schools over here, but now that's all sort of changed and everything. But favorite video game?
Rainbow Six Siege.
Great. I have no idea what that is.
Some video game where him and his friends all have to talk and fight, so...
Fantastic. Oh, great to hear. And thanks again for sharing your story as well. And I know it's on the Reach website for anybody who sort of wants an in-depth look as well. And I always like meeting people who've had more surgeries than I have. I always find that fascinating. You're up to, I think, 12 surgeries, I think. Is that right?
I think in total, when we've counted them all up, I believe we're about 15.
Wow.
I think it's so 15. Give or take one, I 14 or 15. But sometimes I get PTSD thinking back to all.
Yeah.
I try not to go through the medical file unless it's app.
Just best to push on. And I'd like to bring it round to Reach as well, because obviously that's sort of one way we connected, as we're sort of both in different ways. You on the board, me, I think I'm the only ambassador. I think I was the only one who applied to be the ambassador or an ambassador for Reach. And you said you got involved sort of around sort of spring 2018, give or take.
Yeah, give or take a little bit. Yep. So I've been involved since then. Let's see, went to a Nebraska symposium, Sacramento symposium. We just did St. Louis and we had a virtual one. So yeah, I would say about 2018. It has been amazing. The last year's been rough. We've had a lot of transitions. We've just moved back to Colorado from Texas. Not a lot of where we were at hospitals that could really benefit if Benjamin ever needed one with that kind of thing. So we kind of came back home where we feel a little bit better. But no, Reach has been such a pivotal point. Lasting friendships, right? Like Liz is a powerhouse of a woman. I know you've had her on twice, two episodes. I listened to both of those. And Liz is just so inspiring. And she's just so amazing. My family adores her. In fact, my daughter stays with her 6 months out of the year, essentially. She goes up and does some stuff and hangs out and sees Liz and does some interning. But Liz is just such an incredible advocate for Hirschsprungs, and she really is so knowledgeable and so well educated on it. Just being a mom, right? And she really taught me how to use my voice, right? And then having Eric and Isabel and Jack and Alan on the board, I mean, everybody is just so supportive, and it really is such an incredible... What Reach is doing is so incredible. Like, I know we just had our book that just came out. Like, my Eric wrote that book and Isabel illustrated that book. My brother has Hirschsprungs. Just so many people. And we do. We like to talk about Hirschsprungs. We tell everybody. I went to the nurse, actually, when I introduced myself. I always, you know, have to introduce everybody at school. And I said, please visit reachhd.org. And I like do this whole thing. And they're just like, but that's how I introduce. I don't even really explain Hirschsprungs very much to anybody. I say, I would like you to go to our Reach website. Please visit the About Us. Please visit this page. And I kind of, that's how I present Reach, just to, that way people are visiting the website and seeing there's just so much that the website and Reach has to offer for families.
That's fantastic. And I know you mentioned it during your story and just now about how important Reach were to you and your family. But what about the other way around? Because obviously you are part of the Reach board. You're in charge of your community outreach and fundraising. So what do you do to help them?
So we have done several different big things. We try to do fundraising events locally. And then obviously we reach out to anybody who we have different, you know, moms generally that email and want to get into fundraising. So kind of give them a overview of different ideas that we've tried. But Benjamin, actually, Kendra Scott is a great company. to do philanthropy before. They actually let Benjamin come in and design a Reach specific necklace that we have sold on our website. At one point, we sold it during a couple of symposiums. So we do Reach. There's a great wine company out here that'll do fundraising for wine parties. So I've, you know, done a couple of those where if you really just go into your community and you know, talk about, hey, I've done it at clothing stores, small boutiques, big boutique. Like I said, Kendra Scott in the United States is a very big name. And, you know, all these people are willing to participate. And so I just go in and I say, you know, here's a Reach flyer. Would you let us hold a fundraiser in honor of, you know, Hirschsprungs and awareness? And we've done it at malls. We've done it, I mean, literally everywhere. We've done it at boutiques, like I said, school fundraisers. We've done it kind of anywhere we can. Fantastic. To get the word out.
And it's the first question, presumably, what is Hirschsprungs?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And that's exactly what everybody wants. So, first they want to know, how do we pronounce it? That's usually what we get.
Okay.
How do you say that? I'm like, Hirschsprungs. Like, we go through the whole thing. It's really great to educate people, right? And then just getting the word out, because I feel like a lot of people, you know, it's hard to talk about. It's a poopy disease, right? Sure. Nobody wants to talk about something. You know, you don't talk about passing gas in public. You don't talk about certain things just socially. But I think that, you know, bringing attention to it, talking about it, having a place like Reach, where you can go and find like-minded individuals or people that are going through the same thing, it makes it a lot easier to fluidly talk about. So now we talk about poop all the time.
Fantastic. Yeah. No, I seem to now spend every week talking about it on the podcast. So
never thought in my life this is what I'd spend the majority of my time talking.
No, me neither. It's funny how life takes its turns. But I'd love to also bring up that you sit on the Sky Ridge Hospital's pediatric board as well.
I did. When we moved away from Texas, I had to relinquish my seat, but I was on the pediatric advisory board, and a lot of that happened. It was a crummy situation that turned into a great situation. Benjamin at the time had a colostomy, and his intestines protruded, and I rushed him to the emergency room, and the doctor was like, what's Hirschsprungs? And the nurse kindly grabbed her, walked her out of the room, came back and said, we'll be right back with you. And then I said, please don't ever have a doctor ask me what Hirschsprungs is again when my child's intestines is hanging out. And then the doctor proceeded to tell me, I don't know how to handle this. I'm going to have you drive yourself to another hospital where they'll be waiting for you at the ER. So a scared mother drove her child, who had his intestines protruding, another 20 miles to another hospital. And I emailed the hospital and I was like, why wasn't I transported by ambulance? I had a lot of questions. And I met with like the marketing director of the hospital, and she was like, listen, this was obviously a big misunderstanding, you know. Whatever, I gave them the grace, right? Not everybody understands Hirschsprungs or a lot of doctors at that time. I do believe now it's actually part of the nursing program. Many of my nursing friends tell me they spend a whole day on Hirschsprungs, which is huge because that used to not be a thing. But now as I have friends going into nursing school, they're like, oh, it's Hirschsprungs Day. Guess what? Several different TV shows in the States have touched on Hirschsprungs, including The Good Doctor, Grey's Anatomy. You have talked about it briefly, but at the time they wasn't a lot. So they, you know, apologized and they said, we need to rectify the situation because, you know, bad press, not great for a hospital. And they did. They were graceful about it. And then they said, would you like to sit on our pediatric board and help us, from a parent's perspective, get to understand what you parents need or looking for or expectations are? So I spent 5 years on that board, and it was amazing. It was amazing to be able to add value. Still my favorite hospital in Colorado, still the only hospital that we go to in Colorado. And I just think that it was a blessing that they asked me to be a part of that. And it really, I think both parties, we both learned a lot in that.
Fantastic. And I'll just touch on that one part where Hirschsprungs is being mentioned a little bit more. I've had, I think, about a dozen times somebody has sent the clip of Grey's Anatomy where they are talking about Hirschsprungs to me and say, oh, look, sent this to you. And it's fantastic. It's really good. And I thank everyone who has sent it to me. But it is now getting, hopefully, by what we do and what Reach does and what lots of other people are doing, hopefully getting the word out there a little bit more about Hirschsprungs. I know you talked about the book with Reach as well, and my brother has Hirschsprungs. There has been, as we're recording the 27th of August, at the weekend there was another book released all about Hirschsprungs disease by a lady called Gemma Kia in the My Abilities Foundation. She's written a book all about Hirschsprungs disease. Fantastic.
Oh, I can't wait to catch it. I'm going to have to grab it.
I have ordered it. It is on its way. So I will send it, or I will post out on Instagram when I have it and show it as well. So that's
absolutely.
But it's fantastic that there's so much more is being done about Hirschsprungs as well.
In 10 years, I mean, like I said, whenever they told me your son has Hirschsprungs, I no knowledge of it. And now to know that there are, you know, Reach and it's being talked about and there's different programs and it's on, you know, TV shows and eventually hopefully movies and anywhere people consume anything, just to know about it as fluidly as you know about autism or, yeah, you know, lupus or any of these other things. Like Hirschsprungs is. I think it's very relevant. We know several family, several members in Colorado that have it. We knew several people in Texas that have had it. So you know, it's nice because those people can gather and get a sense of community. It's really great when you can find people that have walked the same or similar journey as you.
Absolute. And as we just sort of wind round towards the back end of this. I'd just really like to ask both of you. I'll start with you first, Benjamin. In terms of plans for the future, not just sort of Hirschsprungs wise, but just in general. I know we've talked a little bit about wanting to be a doctor and a sportsman as well. But in terms of sort of talking about Hirschsprungs and writing about Hirschsprungs, do you see doing more of that in the future?
Yeah. Probably, I see me doing, yeah. I would like to write a book.
That would be excellent. That would be absolutely fantastic. But yeah, no, that's... And then dream job, what would you like?
What's your dream job? You can say it. Anything in the world. What's your dream job?
Which one?
Sport. For what? What kind of sports? Baseball. You want to be an MLB player. That's where the big money's at, right? Because there's no cap, so...
Yeah.
Them to be a baseball player too.
Yeah. Go be a baseball player and then look after your mum. That's the thing. That's what you need to do.
Exactly.
And Nicole, to you as well, in terms of future for Reach, future for you, what do you see?
So now that we're back in Colorado, happy to be back. I really had to take, like I said, take a step back in the past year or so, but advocacy and helping people is really where I find my joy in life. Sometimes I think when I grow up, I'd love to be like Liz, where people reach out to me and Liz is just so inspiring. And I just hope to advocate and to be able to be a source of just my personal experience and knowledge to other people. I think for me, just helping anybody in any capacity in life, whether it's with Hirschsprungs or anything else, I really want to get back to my roots of just helping other people because that's like where I find the most joy.
Yep.
Corporate jobs are great and I love my job, but I very much miss just straight advocacy work. If I could do that, that would be my dream job.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're definitely along the same lines there with helping people, raising awareness, all of that stuff. And just lastly, where can people find you and keep up to date with you and your story?
Oh, Benjamin's like, let me chime in here. So we post about Hirschsprungs on my Instagram page, which is just Nicole.Perry.18. That's where they can find me.
Find me. My email is Benjamin.Perry.11@iCloud.com.
You can email Benjamin and he will write back. But Benjamin does, like all kids, if there are any, Benjamin would love for kids to email him or talk to him about it. He would be a great voice of somebody to just encourage them. So if anybody out there needs a pen pal that has Hirschsprungs, Benjamin would love to be your pen pal.
That's fantastic. That's awesome. Thank you so, so much for chiming in. And hopefully there are people who listen to this and children who listen to this who will email you and hopefully maybe with some questions or just to say hi and whatnot. That's fantastic. No, thank you so, so much. Both of you know I mentioned while we were off air that I apologize it's taken so long to have both of you on because are absolutely perfect for the podcast with the Hirschsprungs and reach, etc. But no, thank you so much for everything.
Thank you, Tom.
Both of you.
We are so grateful you asked us to be on. This is amazing. So we appreciate what you're doing. This is incredible. And I look forward to working with you at a different level with Reach as well.
Yes, that'd be fantastic. We'll hopefully have some news to share in the future. And if we do, then you'll find it on probably both of our Instagram pages. And Benjamin might email you as well. So we'll see how we go. But no, just for me, thank you so much to both of you for your time and for everything you do.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.